Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo, and welcome to an hour of Mind Power. Well, we have got a fascinating topic. I've been telling you about this coming up. We're going to be talking about coins from around the world. And this is so very, very interesting. My special guest is Tom Michael, and he is an expert. He's going to be telling us about his background. But if you know of anybody who has a passion for collecting, this is a must-have item, and we'll give you some more information about it. Tom, welcome to the show.
Hi, Donna. Thank you for having me.
I was really impressed when I had reached out, because I have been interviewing people from Krauss Publications over the past 6 years, and I always find they do such a marvelous job with the materials they put out. Well, when Scott Tappa sent me information about the 2008 Standard Catalog of World Coins, and he said, Donna, we have this on a DVD. And I said, oh, really? He said, yes. I said, could you send it to me? And he did. Man alive, I was astonished. This is a combination of information from coins around the world. It's a total of 2,232 pages. It is amazing. Now, Tom, tell us a little bit about yourself. How did you get involved with coin collecting, and is this your passion? And if it wasn't, when did it start becoming your passion?
Well, I guess I started very young, really, which a lot of coin collectors do. Picking out pocket change and things of this sort, but really when it got interesting for me was probably I was 10 years old or so, and my mother started working at a grocery store in the Chicagoland area. And, well, yeah, you have a lot of people returning from trips and such and passing along foreign money into the till, so she would sort those things out every night and bring them home for me. So that's how it started, and then we started asking friends and neighbors who traveled around the world if they would bring coins back for me. So they'd bring little baggies of coins and such, and that went on for a while until I got a little more sophisticated, and I started buying things at flea markets and such, and that's kind of how I developed as a collector.
Wow. Well, I know I was fascinated many years ago with some coins that crossed into my space. Now, I'm not an avid coin collector, but I have a friend whose husband was, and it was just amazing to me, all of the different points of history that he would share relative to, you know, coins and where they came from. And that's one of the qualities about this catalog. I mean, this is it's just amazing what we've been able to do with technology.
Oh,
now,
sure.
What I want to do today, because with this amount of material, we're obviously going to be able to only touch into a certain amount, but I'd like to talk about, because you have three sections in this catalog on the DVD, which would make a wonderful gift for someone, for a birthday, holidays, whatever.
Oh, yes.
You have the section, you have the DVD on the period from 1801 to 1900, which I'd like to get into a little bit in the beginning.
Okay.
And then you have the one on 1901 to 2000,
mm-hmm.
and then 2001 to today.
Yes.
So what I would like to do is go back in time, go back to the 1801 to 1900. And there was a comment in there, and first I have to let my listeners know that this is all categorized according to countries. And even to various communities within countries.
Oh, yes, yes. The organization is pretty straightforward, and we try to make it easy to use. We do it alpha by country, so you can go to a specific country and look things up. We also have political breakdowns in there, so countries that go through a large number of political changes over their time span, those will be broken out and the coins will be grouped under a political realm, so to speak. And then within that, the denomination or the face value of the coin is the next breakdown. Now, the ones that you noticed that were from individual communities and such, some of those are specialized issues that were made to circulate just in that area. In other words, in some of the Latin American countries, you have issues that were made just to circulate in a district, which would be akin to our states.
Mm-hmm.
You also have leprosarian tokens and other things of that nature that were state-issued but only circulated in that realm, either on the island or just in the hospital for lepers and such. You have all kinds of things in the book. And then again, in Argentina and such, you have different political areas and changes of government, which changed the actual geography of the country, too.
Oh, and that's what I think is so wonderful about your material. In fact, I thought, what a wonderful way to teach young people history. This is something that a family can become involved with. And your DVD, maybe they're not in a position to be able to go out and get into coin collecting a lot, but it is something that enables them to find out about history in a very comprehensive format, which I think is just awesome.
Oh, yeah.
Let's talk about Afghanistan for a minute in the 18th, 19th century. Now, coins in Afghanistan, were they a fixed value? I mean, are they a fixed value? How do you go about determining how to value coins from the past like this? Because we have these ship expeditions that come up and they have all these coins maybe even thousands of years past. How do you determine the value?
Well, values in the modern era and for coin collecting purposes, 1800 to present, is all considered modern. Say, for instance, the Afghan coins that you're talking about, you would have to read Persian to be able to read the coin. But if you read Persian, you could see that the denomination or the face value is actually on the coin. In some cases, say, German states issues from the same time period, they might not have a value on a coin at all, like we would say a half dollar on ours or 1 cent.
Mm-hmm.
They might not have a denomination on the silver coins at all. They would be by weights and measures. So you knew that if it was such and such a weight, it was equal to such and such a denomination. Ducats, for instance, German ducats and Austrian ducats, which is a nominal value gold coin, a fairly small gold coin, those circulated for their gold value, and that was fixed at the time, and those coins were struck to weights and measures laid out by the governments to be uniform, so to speak, so that you didn't have to weigh them and test them each time that they passed hands. Whereas when you get earlier in, say, Chinese gold or Japanese gold, some of those they did get weighed and measured each time they were circulated. So if someone went in to buy something, a jeweler would weigh that and determine what the value of the piece was before you got your goods. Now, somewhere along the line, they started marking coins so that if a local jeweler weighed and measured a coin, he would stamp it with his stamp. And
oh, my.
You in the community could look at it and say, okay, if so-and-so says it's good for that amount, then I believe it. And that's when you start getting to more modern coinage that circulates by its face value, so to speak.
When were machines first employed for the making of coins? What country did that originate in?
Oh, that's a tough question. The machine struck coinage that I'm most familiar with would probably have come out of Britain, and I think that's probably where machinery of that type originated. But at the same time, they were beginning to do it in countries like Spain and Portugal as well. You have what we call cob coinage, which goes for some areas of the world all the way into the 1820s or so. And those would be a crude piece that's struck by hand, basically. A die below and a die above and a hammer. And whack it, and that gives you your coin. That's basically called hammered coinage. And for Spanish types, we call them cob coinage. I think because they look like little cobs of metal. Other types, like British, they were much thinner, and those they tend to call hammered coinage. Milled coinage comes in, it's prior to the Civil War, so it would be in the 1840s probably you start getting milling and such. But I don't have an exact date for your country.
Well, I noticed with many of the coins, especially in the first DVD, the World Coins of 1801 to 1900,
yes.
When I looked at Australia and England, my goodness, the artistry is just spectacular,
yes.
Absolutely gorgeous.
Yep.
And then I found that in New South Wales, that their coins had holes in the middle, and I thought, isn't that interesting, because China, they had square centers.
Exactly.
You know, in theirs. And I wonder, is there an overlap here? Was there some kind of a connection with China relative to putting holes? Or were holes put in the coins for the convenience of carrying them on a rope or, you know, like in a pouch? Or, you know, why were they done that way in New South Wales?
Well, it does start with the Chinese coins, as you say. Oriental coins, Japanese, Korean, Chinese, and Annamese, or what we know as Vietnam today, all those areas, they cast coins for thousands of years, and those are the coins you're talking about with a square hole.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes they were oval in shape, sometimes round. There are square issues, all kinds of different things. But the square hole in the middle was used for stringing. You would tie them together, much like a little child's a toy. You've seen those round discs on a little chain.
Oh, sure.
Much like that, and those would be carried like that. They were cast in a certain way too. They were actually in a Christmas tree kind of shape, and the molds would be the top and bottom molds would be set together. And the molten metal, usually iron or copper, would be poured in from one end, and it would fall along a channel, which was much like the trunk of the tree, and then out branches of the tree to the coin shape of the mold, which was out on the ends. Once it cooled, they popped the mold open, they would snap those coins off of the tree shape, file down the rough edge, and your coin is ready to go. That's like I say, thousands of years ago, and they did that for thousands of years. The imitation factor of the New South Wales coins is in that, but they weren't used in that way. They weren't strung together or carried in that way. In the case of New South Wales, what you had in that whole region in Australia was coins from all over the world were circulating. They had Spanish coins circulating there, some British coins. They had nothing of their own. And this was the case in the United States and, pre-United States and in our colonial period, too. We had circulation of all kinds of Spanish coins here. But in New South Wales, they had problems with keeping enough coins in circulation. So what they did was the government bought a large number of crown-sized pieces. They punched out that centerpiece, and that's where you get the round coin. They also stamped, if you read closely on there, a legend right at the cup mark, which says New South Wales and gives a denomination and such. The other piece, the little centerpiece that was cut out,
mm-hmm.
Those were also marked.
Interesting.
Yep, and those were called dumps. Those dumps, those center cut pieces, were used as small change in circulation, and the large piece was worth more. And that's how they kept coins in circulation, because once they're cut up like that and marked for a particular area, their tendency to go offshore and go to someplace else is much less. You also had this in the Caribbean. where they would take a Spanish dollar or Spanish 8 real and cut it into quarters or eighths, and then you would have a little triangular pie-shaped cut piece, and if they stamped it with some kind of mark, say for instance a T, and the island of Tobago would stamp it with a T, and it would stay on the island then. That's how they kind of kept change in circulation, because even in that period, just like we have today, the fluctuation of precious metals made people sometimes melt down coins for the profit they could get off them.
Absolutely true. And one of the things of this period that I found so interesting was how Austria, that wars, as they do typically, affected a lot of the coinage. But I was intrigued to see the double eagle on the Austrian coinage, and I had seen the double eagle on Russian coinage.
Yes.
So was Russia first with this double eagle, or was Austria? I assumed Austria was first, and then the Russians picked up on that symbol, because Germany and Russia, I mean, the German stock, if you will, of royalty is throughout Europe and Russia. I mean, they were very much involved. How did that double eagle end up getting into Russia, or vice versa?
Well, vice versa, actually. The earliest use of it that I know in coins is in Russian coinage, and that goes back into the 15 or 1600s, I guess, and they start using a double-headed eagle. It's a royal symbol. In the Russian one, normally the claws of the eagle, they'll be carrying an orb and a scepter.
Mm-hmm.
The Austrian aren't always like that. Sometimes they almost look more like a screaming eagle with a double head. And then there's various German states that adopted that as well. It's a very regal symbol. It's a powerful, royal-looking symbol. And I think that's how it got its broader uses. It's a whole nother form of study or area of study is heraldry, and that comes into play somewhat in coins, because we do have to know about the arms that are on the coin. Sometimes the legend doesn't really tell us the name of the country or the originator of the coin very well. Sometimes it's greatly abbreviated, let's say, or not even there. Sometimes it's the arms that tell us everything. And in the case of the German states, and sometimes some Austrian areas, some of the Spanish, your arms, you might have certain features of the arms that are the same, because the royal families intermarry here and there. Someone who was born Spanish may marry into an Austrian family, and they may become a ruler of Austria. They
mm-hmm.
carry their heraldic arms with them, and it becomes part of the crest for that country then. There's a rules and regulations on what's dominant on the shields. It's quite interesting. The upper left is the dominant area on an arms, and the center. If there's a superimposed, say, eagle on the center of an arms, that's what tells you where it's originating from, what the family line is. If there's nothing in the center, then it's the upper left. So heraldry is a whole other field.
Wow. As you can tell from listening to Tom Michaels, this has a lot of fascinating information. And Tom, you brought up the cost of metals a moment ago.
Yes.
And in the second DVD, and we're going to move forward to 1901 to 2000, I wanted to cover a little bit of that. You, right at the beginning, you have so much wonderful information on each one of these DVDs, because each one deals, again, with a certain time frame.
Yes.
But also, you give so much information about how people can contact different groups. You give information on publications. And, again, it's the history in it is just mind-boggling. But there is a bullion value, or bullion value.
Yes.
Not bullion, we don't want to be for chicken.
No.
We want to have it metals here. I'm sorry, I mispronounced it. Well, platinum, gold, palladium, and silver. Now, with platinum, there's a statement that currently, and it could have adjusted from the time of printing, it's $1,150 to $1,350 per ounce.
Yes.
Gold is $650 to $670. And palladium is $330 to $350. And then silver is $13.50 to $15.
Yes.
When I looked at this, I thought, palladium. You know, I don't hear that mentioned. And palladium is apparently a very rare metallic element of the platinum group.
Actually, yes, you're absolutely right, yeah.
So I don't hear this mentioned. You know, when people, when you hear stuff on the news or people that'll talk about coinage, it's usually gold coins they're always talking about.
Yeah.
Were these metals common in the earlier periods? What, you know, were they used? I know there was copper and there was tin and there was all kinds of stuff that was mixed.
Yeah. Well, palladium, no, not really. As far as coins go, you don't really get palladium coins until the 20th century. So I think, I know there's a couple of palladium coins in Australia. Tonga has produced a few palladium coins, and Russia's produced a number of palladium coins. They mine it there. But I would say you don't really see it in coins until about the 1970s at the very earliest, and the preponderance of them were done probably in the 80s and 90s, very modern times. Whereas platinum was used by the Russians as early as the 1800s. So you do have some large platinum coins produced by Russia in, say, the 1860s, 1880s period. Nowadays, they do use palladium and platinum both for precious metal coins, but I think they get much more use as industrial metals.
Mm-hmm.
They're used in catalytic converters and a lot of other uses, I guess. They're good transmitters of electric current, I believe. Whereas gold, like you say, that's talked about a lot in the news because for an investor or a person that's looking for a hedge against inflation, gold has always been a metal of choice, I guess you'd say. Europeans, say, I don't know how far back, but definitely back to the post-World War II era, have always had some gold in the family. They'll buy it in common coin form and just keep it as a store of value, so to speak. When we set the prices in the book, this is very difficult when a market is moving as quickly as the precious metals market is moving today.
Mm-hmm.
It means, and those ranges that you are noticing in the front of the listings in the DVD, that's why I had to do those ranges, mainly because it takes about three or four months' time for us to input all the prices and make all the changes when we do a book production period. And the DVDs and the books will come out usually at the same time or close. Because there's that time span, in the 4 months' time, metal can change quite a bit. So we have to have some flexibility and leeway. For instance, the platinum you mentioned had a top end of $1,350 in the DVD, whereas today it's a little over 14, 14 and a quarter or so.
Mm-hmm.
So it's always moving. Now, silver has been more stable over the last year, and that's, I believe, around 14 and a quarter to 14.50 the last 2 weeks or so. Gold, on the other hand, just cracked 800 again today. It went above to about 805, and I think it closed out the day near 801. So
wow.
You've got to keep an eye on that, and that has a lot to do with coins' values, although collector coins tend to have a high premium of their own. When we talk about the metal affecting the coin value, it's usually for coins that track closer to the spot price. So that more common things, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
In the U.S., you have $20 gold pieces that are traded quite heavily and were produced in huge numbers in the 1800s. those in low grade will track very close to their bullion value, so, or as we say, their melt value. The upper end, high grade coins, well-preserved coins, let's say, those are so far above their melt value that they really aren't affected when gold shifts $2 or $5 or even $20 or $100 sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's a whole other facet to the market that gets very complicated and does get a lot of broader news coverage.
Well, I know we're just about out of time, but I do want to mention that this is the 2008 Standard Catalog of World Coins. Now, this is on DVDs, folks. If you were to get this, these three catalogs, I mean, you're looking at 2,232 pages, not just of history, but also pictures of coins and tremendous amount of detail. And one of the things that it also gives you insight to is how to be aware of avoiding fraud. There are so many people out there that will love to sell you something, and you need to know if you're going to be paying hundreds of dollars, maybe even thousands of dollars for a coin, you want to know who you can check with and who you can go to. And that's one thing, Tom, about your book. You have societies that people can get in touch with. You talk about mints. You talk about auction houses, publications. You've got so much wonderful information in here where someone doesn't have to become a victim. If they're planning on doing this as an investment, which there are thousands of people around the world that do this.
Oh, absolutely.
Your material is just awesome.
Yes, I appreciate you saying so. That it's basic information that you want to get. We always used to say in you know, 20 years ago when I started in this field, buy the book before the coin, meaning educate yourself a little before you go and spend a lot of money. And that's really, really a great advice. You really need to learn a little bit. So many people hear about coins and get excited, and that's really good. But I really hate to see them throw money away. And there's so many people out there, telemarketers and other sorts, that are looking to take advantage and sell things for way more than their value. A little bit of education goes a long way, and our DVDs can help you with that, definitely.
Well, let me correct myself on the amount of pages, ladies and gentlemen. It's 3,760 pages. Ouch. So let me tell you, that takes up a lot of space on a shelf, and you can get the DVD collection. It has 82,750 images that you can enlarge, and believe me, you can enlarge them at such a level where it's going to blow your mind. But you know what's even more interesting? It's a great thing to get a family involved with, because you can go and study history, and you can put it on your computer, and you've got it there whenever you need it. And if you've got kids in school, what a wonderful subject matter for them. So this is the 2008 Standard Catalog of World Coins. It's three volumes on three DVDs, and you've got a half an inch of space, a 5x7 equivalent, and that's all it's going to take up in your library. But wow, what you've got at your fingertips. Tom, what's your website?
The website is www.krausebooks.com. That's KRAUSEbooks.com.
All right, you've got it. Krause Books, KRAUSEbooks. .com. That's where you go. Tom, it has been a delight. I think that this is just so wonderful what the company has been able to put together here. I don't know how long it took you to do it, but what a great accomplishment.
It's been many years and a lot of people. We have a base of contributors who help with our products. I believe there's 1,350 people roughly.
Oh, wow.
So it's a lot of people involved and a lot of expertise that's given for the love of the hobby. That's what's fun about it.
Oh, it's wonderful. Tom Michaels is my guest. Tom, again, thank you very much. This is Donna Sebo. We're going to go to break. Don't go away. We've got some other wonderful things to share with you. The World of Coins, the 2008 Standard Catalog. Go to their website. You're not going to want to miss doing this, and it makes a great Christmas gift. We'll be right back.
If you're searching for the perfect gift for a child, consider God's Kiss by Donna Sebo. That's right. Donna is not only a mental practitioner and psychic, she's an author as well. God's Kiss beckons all children and the young at heart to enter the dream world of a little traveler named Johnny. You can order your book today by sending a check or money order to Mrs. Sebo's Classics, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. That's Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. If you'd like both the book and cassette, you pay only $19.95 plus applicable tax and shipping charges. This is the book for your favorite child of any age. Donna Sebo's God's Kiss is about a child's sense of place in the world, and it's destined to be a children's classic. Order now. Call 1-800-872-8852. That's 1-800-872-8852. God's Kiss is written by Donna Sebo and illustrated by Ed Gedrose. Buy it today. 1-800-872-8852.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo, and telephone lines are now open, 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227. Also, we have a toll-free number, 888-815-9756. For those of you in Canada, 888-815-9756, and a direct line of 530-876-3222. That's 530-876-3222. Now, I want to remind those of you who are in the Washington State area, if you're anywhere near Tacoma, Washington, this coming Saturday, December the 8th, I'm going to be participating in the third Dickens Festival at the Stadium High District itself. It is so much fun. This is a wonderful event. I am going to be appearing, and I get to wear one of my fancy costumes. Whoopee! Anyway, I'm going to be there at the Tacoma Little Theater, and that's at 201 I Street, I believe. Now, if you'd like to get the event schedule, if you want to find out what's going on, and the event starts at noon on Saturday, December the 8th, which, again, this Saturday is the day, and I'll be there at the Tacoma Little Theater until 5 o'clock, and I'll be doing many consultations, and part of that will be going towards the event for the coming year, because this is a non-profit event for the community. So if you want to be a part of it, and if you want to come in and have fun, you can wear costumes. Oh, it's just such a blast. It's a wonderful community event, totally oriented towards the family. It is absolutely delightful. And again, I'm going to be at the Tacoma Little Theater. And if you want information, go to their website, dickensfestival.net. Dickens. Festival.net, and you'll be able to get all of that information. So many wonderful things to share. And by the way, if you're a new listener to the show, and if you're a regular listener, just remember, if you want to call in and chat with me, all you have to do is give me your first name or your initial, and then I will give you my impressions. And after that, you are, well, you are going to be able to ask me about anything that you like. And we'll try to limit it to about one question per person. So again, give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 877-876-5227. Canadians, 888-815-9756 or 530-876-3222. Cell phones. Oh my goodness. What did we do before we had them? It's amazing how technology has advanced so rapidly. Well, I am very grateful for a cell phone. I mean, there's just such a benefit to it whenever I'm out, about, and traveling. No matter where I am, I have the opportunity to keep in touch with home and family and office, and it is wonderful. I keep in contact with clients. However, there are some issues with cell phones we all hear about. Don't use it when you're driving. How many times have you noticed people that are supposed to stop at stop signs? The cell phone is up to their ear. They drive right through the stop sign. they are so involved with what they're doing on the cell phone, with the communication, they are not taking care of paying attention and concentrating on their driving. Well, we know that driving with a cell phone in hand isn't the safest thing to do, even if you have a hands-free headset. Well, there's an Ohio State University study that was done, and they said if you are walking and talking on your cell phone, that can be risky too. Now, this is what they noticed. They observed 127 pedestrians, and that 48% of cell phone users crossed the street in front of approaching cars. Just 25% of those on, you know, that were not using a phone did that. And then they had another experiment. People walking while talking on a cell were less likely to notice random objects in their path. And what they put down as an experiment, oh, this is great, I thought, fake vomit. Yeah, right. Did you notice that when you were walking around? Well, I don't know that that's something that I would particularly want to even find. The reality is we, for all of our multitasking capabilities, especially we gals, we need to remember that those cell phones, if we're going to use them, stop. If you are walking, remember, you are focusing on something that is in your hand, and it's not easy to pay attention to what else is going on around you. So if you are going to have that cell phone and you are going to use it, if someone calls you, let them leave a message. Then call them back as soon as you can get to a point of being quiet. Instead of being on that cell when you're driving, and the guys are just as guilty as the gals, you need to be able to pull over to the side of the road or stop somewhere so that you can really talk. And it's just a rule. I don't answer my cell when I'm in my car. I just don't do it. Because if I'm on the freeway, I have to pay attention to everything that's going on around me. So be wise. Also, they said when you're on the phone, not only are you distracted, you are not as aware of the environment that's going on around you. So you need to pay attention. And they found it doesn't make any difference the age. Young people are not able to concentrate any better and pay any better attention than older people. It really makes a difference. I've gotten to the point when I drive, I am watching other people. And if I see a cell phone up to their ear, I'm extra cautious. I really am. Because I know they're not paying attention. I've just had too many go through stop signs. Too many just not even paying attention. They're very engrossed. So be aware. Be safe. Don't be sorry. This is Donna Sebo. We're going to take our first call of the day. Hi, welcome to the show. First name or initial, and where are you calling from?
Michelle, and I'm calling from Las Vegas.
Ooh, one of my favorite places. Is it warm and toasty in Las Vegas?
It's very nice weather.
Oh, I just think that that is one of the best places on the planet. You don't even have to gamble. I know they don't want to hear me say that, but you don't have to. There's so many wonderful things there in Las Vegas. I wouldn't have said that a few years back because Las Vegas never was my favorite place. But by golly, I've changed my tune in the last few years. It is just a great place to go. So I hope you're having a good time.
I am.
Wonderful. Let's get down to business with you, Michelle. First thing I want to say is some paperwork is going to be lost. You must be sure that you file certain documents so that you know exactly where they are. No ifs, ands, or buts. And you've got something here relating to taxes that will be coming up in the next 2 to 3 months. Do not assume anything. Make sure your records are in order. Make it a priority to have everything done before the end of January. And file everything in a locale where you're not going to lose any little bits and pieces that might be very important to you. I'm just looking at you having almost like a whirlwind batch of activity, especially after the first of the year, and it would be very easy to misplace certain documents. Be wise. Don't do it. You have a question for me today?
I have an appointment tomorrow morning that's going to take up. There are two different appointments, and it's a very, there are very important appointments where I'm presenting information to a group. Do you see that coming off successfully?
Well, it depends on what you're wanting to accomplish. I'm looking at some information together that you have posted, but what are you wanting to accomplish with this meeting?
Well, I was asked to be a guest speaker.
Mm-hmm.
And it's along the lines of inspire and motivate, reinforce.
All right. Why are you concerned about this? It looks to me like you've pretty much got a good layout of presentation. What is it you're concerned about with this, really, down deep? What is it that is an issue with you on this?
Connecting with the audience.
All right. If you want to connect with the audience, you need to remember one thing. Your audience is going to be interested primarily in you. They're going to want to know why. This subject matter means a lot to you, and you want to be able to present the information so that it comes both from your heart and from your intellect, but where they are going to walk away feeling like they've been given something. So that is, those are points that I think are always significant. They're basic, and that's what you need to remember. Have your notes. But when you're doing your talk, make sure that you are going to leave them with information, insight, knowledge, contacts, whatever you're going to leave them with. If you have a flyer with particular points that you want to give to them, you want to leave them with something where they can say, wow, I really got something out of this. Because this is your opportunity to give, and that's what you want to do. How long is your talk?
15 minutes in different segments. Two different segments.
Then you can pull something together. If you pull it in really, really tight, you'll be fine. Just remember, you are giving to the audience. You want to make sure that you give them something that when they walk away from hearing you, they're going to say, I want more.
Okay, well, I've prepared for this. Do you get a feeling that it'll fly okay?
Of course. If you do what you know you need to do and you give your best, you'll have a good response. You're worrying about the wrong stuff, and you shouldn't worry to begin with. If you're prepared, then I just want you to know and to focus on the accomplishment of your objective, and that is empowering your audience.
Okie-doke.
Well, have a great time while you're in Vegas.
Thank you.
You're welcome, Michelle. This is Donna Sebo. I know we're going to be going to break in just a moment. Hey, if you want to call in and chat with me, 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227. Canadians, 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. And 530-876-3222. Yes, all those lines are open, and you are welcome to give me a buzz on any one of them. So I will be back in just a moment. Don't go away. Oh, and don't forget, this Saturday, hey, I'm going to be doing a special appearance in Tacoma, Washington, in the Stadium High District at the Tacoma Little Theater from 12 noon until 5 o'clock. And that's at 201, I believe, I Street in downtown Tacoma. If you have any questions, you want to know more information about it, give me a call at 800-872-8852. And I'm going to be doing many sessions there. Okay, time for a break. We're going to be right back.
If you're searching for the perfect gift for a child, consider God's Kiss by Donna Sebo. That's right, Donna is not only a mental practitioner and psychic, she's an author as well. God's Kiss beckons all children and the young at heart to enter the dream world of a little traveler named Johnny. You can order your book today by sending a check or money order to Mrs. Sebo's Classics, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington 98497. That's Post Office Box 97272. Tacoma, Washington 98497. If you'd like both the book and cassette, you pay $19.95 plus applicable tax and shipping charges. This is the book for your favorite child of any age. Donna Sebo's God's Kiss is about a child's sense of place in the world, and it's destined to be a children's classic. Order now. Call 800-872-8852. God's Kiss is written by Donna Sebo and illustrated by Ed Ged Rose. Buy it today. 800-872-8852.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 877-876-5227. Canadians, 888-815-9756 or 530-876-3222. Well, I've been getting some wonderful stories and some wonderful emails from different people, and I want you to know I'm going to be sharing some special Christmas stories, and I have a very dear friend who asked me to help co-author a book. And this is something that I did, and her name is Mary Ellen, and Mary Ellen had a book called A Christmas Filled with Miracles, so I'm going to be pulling out a few of those stories and telling them as we get closer to the magical holiday of Christmas. And I will also be having some wonderful shows coming up. We're going to be talking tomorrow, I don't want to forget to tell you this, with Lisa Lockwood. This is such an awesome woman. Her book is titled Undercover Angel, and we're going to be talking about her tomorrow, and this woman is a SWAT team specialist. What a gal. You're not going to want to miss it. Okay, let's go to our next caller. Welcome to the show, first name or initial, and where are you calling from?
This is Andy. I'm in Auburn, Washington.
Oh, hi, Andy. Welcome
hi.
To the show. All right.
Pardon? Oh, okay, thank
welcome
you.
Welcome to the show. All right, I am, Andy, I am looking at some setbacks with you, dear. I think that you have got some people around you that are really having some challenges. And when I'm watching you, I'm seeing you just agitated. It's like you're scrunching your eyes up, you know, ooh, this just irritates me. And I look at this, and that's the response, and I can't blame you. Because apparently some of these individuals are repeating patterns. And what I want you to do is back off a little bit and really look at the repeating patterns and ask yourself how distant you want to make your involvement with these individuals and if in some way you have enabled them to continue this patterning. In other words, have you made it okay for them to do this time and time again without telling them that this isn't satisfactory? So there are some things that are going on, and I'm watching you going through a lot of stress, and I want to say lighten up, take it easy. You are going to get through this, but there is a learning curve that's involved here regarding communication with people and making it okay that you don't have to be Miss Smiley nice all the time. There may be a point where you have to say to someone with clarity, this is not acceptable. This is not something that I am going to have in my environment. I just choose not to have it, period. If you're upset with it, that's fine. You have a right to your feelings, but these are my feelings. And it can be done in a very down-to-earth way without being obnoxious or rude, and you're very conscientious of how you approach people. But apparently this is a situation where you must really be clear in what you say and let these individuals, apparently there's two, let them know that their behavior, their actions are not going to be tolerated by you anymore. It just is not acceptable. And I think setting the boundaries, that's a good word, setting the boundaries and following through with that is going to be very important. And I think you're going to have a sense of liberation. You're starting to discriminate more and more effectively in your environment. And I think this is very, very long overdue. You need to pat yourself on the back for it and know you're doing a good job. What's on your mind, Andy? What would you like to ask me?
Well, possibly I could say the individuals are causing me to possibly lose my job, which is not because of my work or anything, because they love me at work. It's just, will I be able to retain my job?
Oh, sure. I think there needs to be clarity. What's going on in the office environment?
Well, it's my ex-husband is in contempt of court, and he's not paying my car payment, so my car is going to be repossessed, so I won't have a way to get to work, so they're trying to get me transferred in time so I have a way of getting into a closer area for myself, so to speak.
So your people at work are helping you to deal with this situation?
Yes, they are. They want me to stay, but I'm going to have to be transferred, and they don't know if there's going to be something I can transfer to, so they're working on that, and I'm within like a week time frame of...
All right, I want you to look at something else. I want you to work with another option. If you have to take a bus to get to your job, then deal with that. The company that is repossessing the car, is there any way you can work out an arrangement with them?
No, there's no way.
All right, then I would say you need to try to contact someone that would enable you to get a vehicle. Get busy on this. That your car is being repossessed because your ex-husband has not made payments as he agreed to do. That's a fact. Look at what your other options can be. And you may be able to get a used car or have some form of transportation made available to you that will allow you to be able to go to and from work. So see if you can carpool with someone. Don't look at this as a door slamming in your face. And then if there is any way that you can hold your ex-husband accountable on this, if this is his responsibility, and you can amend this so that it's not going to affect your credit rating, that's going to be very important. How long has he not made payments on the car, and when did you learn about this?
Well, it's been a long time, and I had a lawyer come and protect me so they couldn't come actually out of at my bank account and my paycheck, because I don't have the income for that. But if they are working on transferring me, so I'm hoping that I can be transferred.
Well, I think that's going to happen. But I think you need to be able to develop a different attitude about this situation with your ex-husband. You need to deal with the facts. And you need to be able to be proactive with this and not be a victim.
Yeah, I'm doing the best not to be a victim of the whole thing.
You're not a victim here. This is something, he's exhibiting a certain behavior. This is not acceptable. So if you have an attorney, contact your attorney, say, what action can I take against my ex? What can I do? What are we going to do here? And then start talking to some people you know. Do you know of somebody I can rent a car from for a month, you know, for $100 or $200 a month or whatever? You need to look at some things. And put your thinking cap on and ask for some help. The car is not an issue. The car is a thing. Okay?
Okay.
The car is a thing. You'll always be able to get another car.
Yes, that's true. I just want to get work.
So keep things in perspective, hon. I've got to go. I'm out of time.
Okay, well, thank you.
You are welcome.
So much.
You're very welcome, Andy. Good wishes to you, and I want to say, for all of you listening, thank you so much for being a part of the show and for being there, being a part of a listening audience. I've just learned from an engineer that we are going to be having a listing of the affiliates that are carrying our programming. So that is going to be coming up, and as soon as I find out about stations in wherever they are that might be carrying the Donna Sebo Show, we're going to let you know so that you, in certain areas, you'll be able to tell your friends about it and just get the word out there. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. We're going to be right here, same time, same place here at bbsradio.com. You don't have to miss a show. Listen to the archives. You'll never have to miss one of the programs on the Donna Sebo Show because we're going to still be there for you, right whenever it's comfortable for you to listen, but we'd love to have you here live. Same time, same place, tomorrow, with Lisa Lockwood, the Undercover Angel. Dynamic show. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.